I'm on dead air right Lock now. We're going to do live. We're going to do the intro and make a little
Tonight, 40 of the top WCW wrestlers will be picked at random to wrestle in a unique tag team format. Then the winners advance to the Battle Bowl, where only one man stands as the winner in Starrcade 91, the Lethal Lottery.
Yeah. Remember back when Sky Lolo, there was a little beaver?
Hello again, ladies and gentlemen.
I saw at the Hempstead Arena in New Jersey. He really got him, though.
Yeah. Hello and welcome to another edition of Over the Top Radio. I'm sorry about the little mishap with the theme music. My co-host totally screwed everything up, and I apologize for that. But we are on the air with myself, Pitcher, and Craig. And Craig, go ahead and introduce our guest.
Oh, Lord. Our guests tonight have been a staple on the indie wrestling scene in the Pacific Northwest for the last 18 years. And they played a big part in breaking myself and also Brian Alvarez into pro wrestling. They're working this Sunday in Tulsa, Oklahoma for Sooner World Class Wrestling, a show benefiting domestic violence. What a better way to combat domestic violence than a wrestling show. Please welcome to the show the Suicide Kings, Matt Farmer and Nikki Six.
Did you call me? Hey, how's it going? This is Matt Farmer right here. Speaking of domestic violence, we're planning on beating some women up tonight.
That's good, Matt.
you're wrestling Brian Alvarez tonight?
No, I said a woman, not a girl.
Oh, okay.
We like our women with full sweaters. And you got Nikki Six on the line right now too.
Hello.
What's up, Nick?
Hey, how are you doing, brother?
Good, man. How are you?
Oh, man, great.
Yeah? You make it to Oklahoma okay?
We're here, man. This is going to be the first time the original Suicide Kings have worked in at least 4 years with each other in the tag.
Yeah.
I mean, for us, it's a really special deal, you know what I mean?
I'm not trying to break you guys up really quick, but I got a special guest right here on the line real quick. Chris Youngblood of the famous Youngblood family right here.
Hey, what's going on?
Hey, how's it going, Chris? How you doing, man?
Man, you know, I tell you what, it's a privilege to be here in Oklahoma and get back in the ring. It's been a while. It's good for a good cause, domestic violence, and it just feels great being back in the ring and especially some of my younger peers and stuff and some of the old-timers with me. And we're going to tear it up here in Oklahoma.
I used to watch you and your brother all the time back in the day. How's your brother doing?
Doing great, man. He lives up in Amarillo. I live down in Austin, Texas nowadays. And everything's going great. You know, he's got some stuff going on, and him and I, you know, he doesn't get in the ring anymore and wrestle anymore, but I still got a little bit of youth behind me, and I still, you know, keep on strive to go out in the ring and show these younger guys, you know, how it was done back in the day.
Now, Chris, my favorite all-time babyface tag team was Ricky Steamboat and Jay Youngblood, and I was wondering if you could give us some thoughts on your late brother, Jay.
Oh, Jay is the best. I was just speaking to him earlier of what a talent he was, and he was before his time. You know, he was such a bright individual, always caring, always about the wrestling business, and always about conducting himself as a professional. And that's what a lot of things, you know, guys need to go out there and look and see how you carry yourself in the ring, but, as, you know, out of the ring as well. You know, he's very professional, and he was always about taking that extra step, you know, to make sure that people followed and watched what he did. You know, him and Steamboat were, I'm kind of biased on this, probably the best tag team in the world. I know there's a lot of them out there. But seeing, you know, some of the techniques and some of the stuff that they did in their day, in their heyday, would surpass anything that I've seen, you know, since that. And you got power guys, you know, you have the Road Warriors, not to take, you know, anything away from you know, from them. But, you know, Rock and Roll Express, and you have different, you know, varieties across the world, the nation, people might think different. But the way those two gelled, the, what they did back in the day, it would be really just hard to really put a level of expertise of how well they gelled together and how well they worked hard. Like I said, they're before their time.
Yeah, like a lot of tag teams, like the Rock and Roll Express, it's usually the same formula. It's they get the heat on Ricky and then he makes a hot tag to Robert. But with Steamboat and Jay, it was like either guy could make the hot tag, and it was two totally different comebacks. And it was, I thought they were so awesome. I only got to see them when I first started watching wrestling for a couple of years before they went their separate ways. But I'll always have my memories of them being like the greatest team of all time.
Oh yeah, you know, definitely. They put a lot. Like I was saying, they would go the extra mile. I remember as a kid in the car, and actually, and I don't want to show how old my age is, but I was a young kid back in the early 80s. And I remember riding with them to different shows throughout the Carolinas, and they always carried a little tape recorder with them. If they thought of an idea, they would talk into, you know, to the tape recorder, and they would tape it. And, you know, a lot of them, you know, got trashed, and a lot of them they kept. A lot of things they did, but, you know, back then they were so geared at being who they were and gelling as such a team, you know, and matching, having even the same, you know, designer of design, the same people making the same type, the same type of you know, tailors, you know, they went to the same people because they wanted their look and the way they present themselves to be very, very, like, and they were always doing stuff like that. And which a lot of people don't understand, that it's just, you know, it's, you know, going out there and getting cookie cutter outfits and saying, well, I'm this and I'm that, it takes more than that. And then going home and putting your tights in the bag and you leave your persona in the bag. Those guys didn't just do that. They just kept, you know, they kept it. They did take it home. They lived it. And they kept on, and they strived, and they'd call each other at 3 or 4 in the morning and go, hey, I got this idea. Or, hey, you know, why don't we do this? And a lot of the ideas that you see during the day, you know, the heyday with the Crockett pay-per-views and the Charlotte territory, and even into All Japan, were spawned by Jay and by Ricky. And a lot of times, and I'm, you know, again, I'm not trying to be biased or anything, but Jay was a hell of a thinker. He was always trying to come up with things, and, you know, and I think that a lot of it rubbed off on Ricky Steamboat. A lot of people think it was reversed. But Jay was a very, very smart individual about of being who he was in the ring. And coming from a second-generation basis, you know, he was really had, you know, and the composure to do it. And unfortunately, I got in on the tail end of it, you know, and I got back. I got in the business. I never wanted to be a professional wrestler. I went to college right out of high school, and during that time is when Jay passed away in 1985. I was in college, and so I had to pick up some bookings from him, and I had to fill some pretty big shoes. Even though my foot was bigger than his, I had to fill some shoes. And, you know, I would probably never ever be considered, you know, the level of what he was, but having the opportunity to go back, you know, to go in there and to represent, you know, the Youngblood name and family, it was a privilege for me to go and do it, and to do it to the extent that I did it in. And I was very successful in my career. And I actually, you know, I had, you know, my own different highlights and high spots in the business. Of course, when I my brother and I, Mark, we were a bigger name in Japan than we were here in the States and for All Japan. And then in between those spots that we go over there, I was working in Dallas, and I approached Skandar Akbar, and I told him, I said, you know, hey, you know, everybody sees the squeaky clean image of being baby faces and being, you know, the Youngbloods and Steamboats, and you'd never see those guys turn heel. I said, what about me turning heel coming in Dallas? And when I did so, Akbar was open to the idea, and I came up with the name The Medicine Man. And, you know, and it was a heel persona. And at the time when I did come in, a young and upstarting wrestler by the name of Steve Williams, a.k.a. Steve Austin, had just started the business. And I remember him, we were in Devastation Incorporated together. And I would pick him up at the docks downtown Dallas, and I'd pick him up my little Volvo 240 station wagon, and we go to the towns, and along the way we talk to each other, and he'd ask me a heck of a lot of questions, and I guess evidently he knew that, you know, he wasn't getting all the training that he needed to by Chris Adams. So I kind of took him under my wing. We go to the sportatorium and work out in the ring. You know, he asked me a heck of a lot of questions and stuff like that. And then, you know, when he reached his pinnacle, you know, I was so proud for him. And, you know, I wasn't, you know, just for the pride and everything and the energy and everything, I didn't want to ask him, call him and say, hey, man, I need a job. I want to come work for Vince and want to come up to New York and do all that stuff. Kind of let it flow the way it was. That's just the person that I am. But, you know, it was a privilege for me to be there at, you know, at points in time with some people and help them out. And, you know, it was just a great era in my life and having, you know, get to work with a lot of great talents. Of course, you know, I was talking earlier about some of my friends about the days when I started, and I was in Puerto Rico and I was only an 18-year-old kid. And I was accepted by, you know, the 18 list of international wrestlers like Stan Hansen, Bruiser Brody, the Funks, of course, the Sheepherders, Abdullah the Butcher. It was an A-list guys, you know, set of guys. And here this 18-year-old kid comes into business, and they took me under their wing. And I was also one of the first, and actually was the youngest gaijin to go to All Japan Pro Wrestling at the age of 18. And compete over there in the Real World Tag Team League in 1987. And it really was a privilege because of, you know, the path that my father and also what Jay had set out for me. Like I said, it was pretty big shoes. Unfortunately, in my life, you know, there was a lot of tragedy. Of course, Jay passed away in 1985. And then Bruiser Brody, you know, the tragedy with him, which was a great friend of mine as well. You know, he ended up passing away in 87. And, you know, there's a lot of things that happened in my life that, you know, if those things probably would never happen, you know, you might have seen me with the likes of Shawn Michaels and Steve Austin. And, you know, that's my age range of guys. And, you know, I would have been right there with them. But I had a lot of hardships I had to take care of mentally because of the things that I went through. Having to lose, you know, those people that were so close to me. And then along the way, you know, as I got older, you know, I lost a lot of friends that were my age in the business, you know, succumbed to drugs and to death and in, you know, a tragic way. But I don't regret, you know, the fact that I wasn't right there and I wasn't, you know, buddy-buddy and right there and, you know, with them and made the money they did. I had a damn good life in professional wrestling. You know, I grew up as a little kid, and it's a known fact that when I was born in Amarillo, Texas, my father was wrestling at the sports arena, and the same night, because there was a blizzard happening, that my mother gave birth to me, I was actually taken to the sports arena the day I was born, and my dad was performing. And actually was, you know, had to wait, you know, until he got done so they can take the newborn baby home. And that just, you know, and on top of that, I've been working on a book as well and about, you know, the things that I've happened and you know, the eras of my father and, you know, Jay and what I went through in my life. And, man, I tell you what, it's just, you know, stories don't ever end. There was some really, really great times. There was some tragic times. There was some enlightening times, horrible times. But the main thing is that, you know, I always kept focused and I always passed that on to my family. And I hope, you know, my children do that as well.
Well, Chris, it was a real pleasure to get an opportunity to talk to you. It was a nice surprise. And before we let you go,
let's do this again. Let's totally do this again.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I mean, you know, and I'm, you know, I'm not going to try to blow, you know, smoke up my derriere, but I'll tell you that, you know, I've been, you know, I'm a highly educated person. You know, I've got a drafting degree in design and AutoCAD and MicroStation in associated drafting. I got an associate's degree, and I also have a business degree, and I'm a few hours away from my MBA, and I really think that the mind needs to grow and continue to grow. And that's why I went back and did these things. And, you know, and it also helps with, you know, it helps with the fact of the matter is that I've got to, you know, live the life that I have. And it was kind of reversed. You know, I got to do a lot of things up front early. And now I went back to school and did all my stuff now that I should have done back then. But, you know, considering the circumstance, but I'd love to, you know, I would love to come back and talk to you guys and give you guys some, you know, some stories of what really truly went on with, you know, some of the greats out there. And, you know, I have the utmost respect for most, you know, boys in the business. And there was really some great guys that I got to share experience with. And, you know, you wouldn't believe, you know, there was times when, you know, and we'll go on this on another, you know, I'm going off another tangent. But, you know, because of the situation was I got to meet Quentin Tarantino, you know, the singer Sting, Donna Summer, you know, there was just different, you know, plethora of people because I was on the road and traveled many places, South Africa, Austria, Puerto Rico, Trinidad, West Indies, of course, Japan, you know, and when you're around that level of entertainment, you're around those kind of people, you bump elbows with people. And but some of those stories are, you know, probably going to be best kept for another time. But I appreciate you guys letting me speak tonight. And, you know, like I said, I'm here for a good cause. And, you know, I'm just trying to, you know, to come out here and to do things for the next generation and to keep the business, you know, as wholesome as it was back in the day instead of this, you know, watered down, you know, thing that we have to deal with today. So,
yeah.
Definitely.
I'll be in touch. I'll be in touch.
Okay,
thank you so much, Chris. All right.
Thank you, sir. Take care.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Chris.
Wow.
That was a nice surprise. That was awesome. Nikki, one of the first questions that I wanted to ask you.
I'm here.
Okay. Yeah, just recently, your name was brought up on Brian Alvarez's radio show. And he mentioned that because of you, he almost quit wrestling after his first match, and I wanted to give you a chance to defend yourself about that. He said that you grossed him out because you're kind of hairy and you were covered in baby oil.
You know what? I think the baby oil thing has been brought up a few times because I've been told it's I'm still there. I mean, I don't know. A lot of people wear baby oil. You know,
yeah.
I really don't know how to comment. as far as being hairy, I'm Russian. I mean, what do I do about it? But
I'm Russian.
I do shave down, and that is it. But you know, that's early days. I mean, that was it. That's all it would have took him to quit.
You know, I really think that the biggest problem with the presence with the baby oil and the hair and the body was here's what happened in Brian's first match. He actually got wood.
Right.
And I think it was the embarrassment because there was that wood during the match that he actually thought about not doing it again because it might have, you know, brought something up.
Right.
Yeah. You know Craig.
Well, I've seen him in the shower. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Okay, now speaking of Craig, let me get my next question for both of you guys. I've been doing this show with Craig for a while, and whenever we talk about wrestlers or matches, Craig's all about work rate. He's a little snobbish when it comes to work rate, and I wanted to know just how good of a worker was Craig, quote-unquote.
Oh, God, here we go.
I never realized Craig worked.
Yeah, it was all a shoot. The whole thing was a shoot, brother.
It felt like it.
Well, yeah.
Craig was a classic shooter.
Yeah, classic.
He really could take somebody out at any moment. So.
Yeah. The funny thing is I learned how to throw a punch after I got out of the business.
Yeah,
that's the best part.
Exactly.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that. Yeah. I mean, I had some knots on my head from Craig.
I got a few from you as well. So there you go.
So
yeah,
to say
those are called receipts.
For you to say that you learned how to throw a punch. Okay.
Go ahead, Nick.
What do you say?
Is it true that Craig's gimmick was basically he was like a fat raisin?
Absolutely.
A fat raisin?
Yeah.
Yeah. Raven, not raisin.
Oh, Raven, not raisin. Craig's a really nice guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, Craig's a great guy.
Absolutely.
I'll tell you something, Ed. Whenever you talk to a wrestler, and that wrestler might not have been that great in the ring, but they're a really good guy.
Yep.
The wrestler's always going to say that guy was a really great guy.
Absolutely.
And again,
so I
can
leave it at that.
So Craig, you did learn how to throw a punch?
Almost.
I think we only were like worked once ever, like in a tag or something.
Yeah, the only time I was in the ring with you in front of people was at the Enfest show that we did, which was a big concert here in the Northwest. You remember that one, Matt, where you threw up in the back of the ring truck?
Yes, that was awesome.
Yeah. So
ring truck
I was working
slash dressing room.
Right. And I was working. It was a 6-man or 8-man, and I got to do the comeback on Nikki Six, and then immediately
tagged out. I remember that day. I gave you your move, the spear.
Yes. You whipped me into the corner really hard. I no sell it and hit a spear.
I'll say this about Craig. Craig tried, and he won for the business, and he got hurt. You know, that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, who's better, Craig or Vinny?
Oh, jeez.
Who had better ring gear?
Oh, Vinny by far.
Yeah, Craig. Craig has the hair, too.
Yeah.
Shoulders Torelli?
Yes.
I never really saw Vinny work.
I haven't either. I never seen Vince. I trained a few times with him, but that was it.
I'll tell you this.
Yeah,
I was more athletic. I was more athletic than Vince ever will be. Right? Okay.
Oh, I'm probably. Yeah.
So Nick, are you still living in Atlanta?
Yes, I am in Atlanta now permanently. I mean, well, until I get transferred somewhere else, but that's where I live. Yeah.
Are you working any shows over there, or are you just?
I haven't yet. I just my regular job takes up a lot of my time. So, I am about to start because me and Matt, we're going to go to Japan next month. So we have a 10-day military tour going on.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
that's pretty cool.
I've been training like crazy just to get in shape because I came out to do this show and they're paying me. But after this week, I'm going to start taking bookings there. I did take some bookings there, but I just wasn't ready because of my job, and I couldn't get in proper shape. So.
Right. Now, you and Brian, like, had, well, it was basically Brian's first feud. Brian feuded with you, and I feuded with Matt. obviously, Brian became a heck of a worker. And, in you know, that was, 14 years ago. Not to mention, he's like the second biggest dirt sheet rider in the world. If
that
I could
awesome.
Say that.
I know, and it's, I mean, it's, I'm so happy for Brian. That was awesome that he became
yeah.
that. I, you know, I remember when he was, you know, doing his little newsletter and wanted to interview me and all this stuff back
yeah.
in, when I was nobody, and I'm just like, why would you want to interview me? I mean, I've worked, you know, 10 matches. But, I mean, hats off to Brian. That's fucking awesome. And excuse me, sorry. But, you know, I Brian's awesome, too. Like, I got to say this. Whenever I call him to help, if I ask him to plug anything over the years or anything, he's just more than receptive to me, you know, when he doesn't ask
mm-hmm.
me. So, I have yeah. nothing but great things to say about Brian. So, go ahead.
Well, that's not going to work because we were hoping you guys were just going to bury Brian all show long.
Brian's done a lot. I mean, he as a sheet writer, for somebody that hates wrestling, he's done a great job.
Yeah.
for somebody that doesn't know anything about wrestling, he's done a great job.
Yeah, he's yeah. faked it well.
Yeah.
Now, Matt, I got to ask you if you can repeat. I think you told the story the last time you were on the show. And I kind of brought this up to Brian, and he tried to act like he didn't know what he was what I was talking about. So I'm going to get someone to record this and play it for him, and then he can answer it. And, yeah, it talked about, and this is like the gayest sounding thing in the world, where him and some guy had a wrestling match in their underwear in a hotel room, and Brian Howard supposedly made a Sharpie put his initials on his sock like the old-time wrestlers used to do with their boots.
Yeah, actually, Nick could tell the story better because
yeah.
he knows more about it firsthand. But it really happened.
Uh-huh.
We actually this is a shoot. We were just on the phone with his opponent just minutes before you guys called.
Dan Adam.
And it happened. Dan Adam. They had Dangerous Dan Adam. They had
uh-huh.
a shoot or not? They had a backyard wrestling match in a hotel room. I don't know if they were closed. I can't say they were.
Was there baby oil?
But it happened, you know. But Brian's Mexican, so there might not have been baby oil, but it happened.
So, you know what? I heard about this match. It was for the YWF Intercontinental Championship, and
right.
it took place in L.A. So some guys, they were on a road trip, and
Bash
they,
at the beach weekend.
Everybody went, huh?
Bash at the beach weekend.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that
maybe,
was the time
yeah.
that Dan snuck backstage at Bash. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. So they have a hotel room match, and Dan actually won the belt by giving him a powerbomb, and he hit Brian's head on the ceiling, and then deposited him onto the bat. That was how he Dan won the YWF Intercontinental Championship, and that was it was discontinued slow, you know, not too far after that. He never got to defend it, which is unfortunate.
Oh.
I mean, because that
yeah.
is, that
they
is
could,
a hell of a
well,
finish.
There wasn't
I mean?
Many hotel rooms that, like, charged by the hour, so it's hard to defend.
Yeah.
Hey, so you guys are down there in Oklahoma, and, Matt, you said something about hitting the bar. And tell us the cast of characters that is around you for this show tomorrow.
Well, actually, right now I'm in a hotel parking lot.
Okay.
And, you know, cruising for chicks, you know.
Oh, sure.
But we've been in the bar. We've been in the bar for a while. We're actually supposed to go back to the bar, get this, in our gimmicks, and do, like, a promotion at this bar that's kind of, like, promoting the event tomorrow. So.
Oh, God.
And, it'll be fun. We're going to be there in our tights inside of a bar with a bunch of fucking rednecks.
Right.
And so, yeah, it'll
I got
be
a wig and the shorts and everything. So, I'm actually, you know,
yeah.
I'm doing the other side of the gimmick. I got a green shirt.
Is Bushwhacker Luke in the house this evening?
He is.
That guy,
he's in the house. Bushwhacker Luke's there.
He's awesome.
The original Doink the Clown Matt Bourne is there as well.
Oh,
really?
Wow.
In full gimmick. And I got to tell you, it's great to see Matt Bourne back in action as Doink the Clown because, man, that guy's got – I've got mad respect for Matt Bourne.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
How's he look?
He's looking good, man. man, yeah. I saw him a few years ago, and he looks young.
Yeah.
Great shape.
Good.
Yeah.
I always thought he was underrated when he was Big Josh.
You know, Matt was always one of those kind of workers that was just naturally, he's just a gifted wrestler, and he's a tough guy, and everything he does looks good. It looks believable. He's just one of those guys that maybe he's like the epitome of an underrated guy.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, if you want to see Matt Bourne great on the national level, I mean, he was on the first WrestleMania, you know. Otherwise, his best work previous to that was Portland, and then you got the Doink work, which he actually, you know, cemented the character. Because it probably might not, I mean, I was saying, it might not have got over, though, without him laying the groundwork on that, honestly. I mean, I don't know, though. You know,
yeah.
It's pretty crazy.
I don't think that character could have gotten over unless Matt was Doink. And you know what's sad is, like, that character as Doink the Clown, I think it could get over today if Matt Bourne was working that part.
He was really good at it. I mean, he was great. And I remember back when he came into Georgia with Arn Anderson as his tag team partner for a couple weeks.
Yeah.
You know, Arn had that funny-looking fedora on and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, in their tag team, this is not a knock on Arn at all, but during their tag team run, Matt was the workhorse of that team.
Oh, yeah. By far, that's like when Arn was very young in the business. And I think Matt might have also worked Mid-South, had a good run in Mid-South, too.
He did as part of the Rat Pack. He was a tag team with, like, Ted DiBiase and Jim Duggan. He beat some people up in a bar. He actually saved Jim Duggan from getting beat up by, like, a large group of people. And by saving him, he injured a couple guys, and he had to, like, leave the territory.
Oh, wow. Wow, I never heard that story. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And Jim Duggan did not have his 2x4 that night. That was probably, like, a real, you know, thing that happened.
Now, Matt, speaking of, we're talking about some of these older guys, you're actually writing the book about Playboy Buddy Rose. How's that going?
You know, it's going good. When Buddy passed away, we were about 3/4 of the way completed. But when he passed away, I was kind of stuck. I was like, what am I going to do with this book? It's kind of hard publishing a book in the words of a person who is no longer there to back up those words. And now, as we speak, there's a little bit of a issue with his existing family members, you know, so the rewriting of the book might have to be taking place. I might have to rephrase, I don't know. It's hard to say. I want the story to get out there. I just don't want to get sued by putting the book out there.
Is it a thing where his family members don't really want a lot of the truth out there, or they want it, sugar-coated, or what's kind of the thing?
Well, there's different sides of the family. I don't want to point any fingers or say anything out of line.
Sure.
There's different sides of the family, you know. That's pretty much all I could say. There's two different sides. They both have different views. And that's about, wow, that guy is drunk. yeah.
He's not talking about me.
Yeah.
No. Hey, have you ever heard the story about Brian Alvarez trying to get into a club wearing fucking Adidas pants?
Oh, tell him. I love that story.
You love that story.
So we're coming back from Canada one night. Matt, you fill in the blanks here, or Nick.
No, you fill in the blanks, Craig. I was probably drunk.
We're coming back from Canada one night, and me being the only married guy in the vehicle, I'm like, let's just get home as quick as possible. And Nick's like, no, let's go to the Royale in Bellingham. And this is a college town, and
the Royale,
and that's where the Hizors hang out, and Nick and Matt were down for Hizors. And And so we get to the club, and all Brian is wearing is Adidas wind pants. And, of course, that's what he wrestled. Yeah, well, that's what he wrestled in at the time as well. But the doorman basically stopped us from going in and pointed at Brian and said, you got to change that pants, bro. And he didn't have any of the pants.
I actually thought he said, get out of line, nerd.
Well, it might have been that too, but... So,
what about this part of the story, though? It's Craig, being the loyal family man that he is.
Absolutely.
He absolutely did not want any part of this.
No.
It says he's going to stay in the car.
Yeah.
So, I told
yeah.
him.
You're just going to stay in the
again,
car all Craig, night, Craig.
Again,
yeah,
don't tell me you're going to stay in the car because I am not going to come out of there.
Right.
You're not going to make me leave any faster.
Yeah.
But so anyways, now we get out of the car, we stand in line, and then, you know, Craig, now he's enjoying himself, you know. He was doing out of line or whatever, but anyways, we're yelling at girls and stuff, and Craig's laughing and
music
enjoying the whole scene of it.
Music Factory's bumping in the background.
Fuck, it wasn't that long ago. Jesus Christ. But like Tupac was playing, okay? But,
yeah.
Like, good music.
Yeah.
Time. So
yeah, no rhythm.
But anyway, so we get up there finally, and then, yeah, they tell Brian, you can't come in.
Nerd.
Yeah. In you know, in a cut-off shirt.
And, right.
Oh, here's my best Brian story ever. Oh, God. It's not that bad, but it's the best story, Brian story ever. Okay, so Dan, the guy that defeated him for his Intercontinental title in the hotel room with the head-to-the-ceiling powerbomb.
Uh-huh.
And it dislodged a lot of stuff from the ceiling, like, you know, all the white stuff. Anyway.
Yeah, Dan, the Dove Master Adams.
Okay, so this is what happened. Dan gets married, okay? Brian comes to the wedding.
That's right.
And Brian is dressed like Shawn Michaels. Like,
right.
But this is like, it must have been 2000,
1995 Shawn Michaels.
Right.
Yeah. So Brian is there with a complete 5 o'clock shadow beard. He's wearing a blazer, cowboy boots, and a t-shirt underneath. And the t-shirt was actually a cut-off t-shirt.
Yeah.
Because I fucking ribbed him. I'm like, I bet that fucking shirt is a cut-off t-shirt. And
yeah,
it was. I'm serious.
It was so high that the fanny pack couldn't cover up his belly button.
Don't forget the cowboy boots.
No, I mean, with the blazer clothes, it looked like it was a real t-shirt, okay? I mean, I'm not saying he looked like he was, like, homeless or anything. I'm just saying.
Right.
And, you know, and then he had the ponytail, too. So he had the Shawn Michaels ponytail, beard. He just didn't have the cowboy hat on.
And the boots. He had the boots and
yeah,
the belly button.
He had the boots. Dude, I swear to God about the boots. I don't know about a belly button ring. I didn't really make him open up his coat, but he did admit it was a cut-off shirt.
You know, I've always thought Brian looked pretty gay, but you can't top this story.
Hey,
dude, huh?
I was going to say, tell a story about wrestling the Leviathan Dr. Luther. Up in Canada.
Wow. Oh, man. I mean, this is a long one.
Yeah.
Let me try to condense it. Okay, so. All right. So I always, like, worked underneath, and then I came up with my gimmick, and I bought gear, and all of a sudden they're making me work on top, okay? And then so I come up there the first time up to Cloverdale for Tim. And I work under my new name of Nikki Six, okay? Which they made a huge deal out of. Oh, you can't change your name. Everybody knows you as Nick Allen and all this nonsense. Okay? So anyway. So me and Brian worked the opener, and we did a 15-minute Broadway, and it was like one of the best matches we ever had. I gave him a power slam off of the second rope, and it looked like a tombstone. It was sick. So Anyway, now, the main event that night was Buddy Wayne and Samito against Luther and Leviathan. And Buddy Wayne and Samito didn't show for whatever. So because of that, Tim's like, all right, Nikki Sixx, you're going to work. And then he teams me up with this guy, Lane Fontaine, who's a Canadian guy. He's a nice guy. But at the time, he was maybe like 6 months in. So basically, he had no training or anything, you know.
He was a good guy like Craig.
I don't have nothing bad to say about anybody. So, but like you said, he's inexperienced. Okay, and now myself, I never had worked with anybody at that time. I had one match with Ed Murdy. That was the only named guy I'd ever worked
with. Okay. Yeah, he's got. I'm sure.
So
I mute your phone.
Here. So you there?
Yeah.
Hello.
Motion.
I got some.
Okay. Are you guys there? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Hello. Hello? Okay, so anyway, so now Tim also kept them guys separate from everybody, okay? Because they didn't have any heat with where we were, but those guys had just come over from ECW or ECCW, and they had, like, beat somebody up, like, so bad that they got fired was the story I heard, okay? And so anyways, we fucking never saw them guys at all. They kept them in a complete other room in their side of the building. They bring Doc and the other guy over to me and Lane Fontaine, and they give us the finish, and Lane, he's just terrified. And both of them guys are super fucking juiced, too, you know? And so they give us the finish.
They've been working out a lot with a lot of protein shakes.
So fucking Doc's like, do you guys want to do anything? And then I gave him a spot. He's like, cool. All right. So we go out and work. And, dude, just when I locked up with the guy, it was, like, the hardest lockup I ever felt in my whole fucking life. And, you know, I amateur wrestled since I was, like, 12. And it was crazy how stiff it was. You know, they dropped me in my head and all this stuff. But they took everything back. You know, you could punch him in the face, whatever, you know, it wasn't a big deal. And they beat Lane up real bad in the match. Like, he had acne on his face, and it was all cut open and bleeding, and Luther scissor kicked him in the face like crazy. I mean, like, with me, they didn't take any liberties or anything, and but, I mean, they were really stiff. But after the match, in the back, and like I said, I never worked anybody that was, like, a real worker. And in the back, Luther came up to me. He's like, "Hey kid," he's like, "You're real good." Yeah. So I mean, it was awesome.
I don't want to go down.
He's like, "Make sure you give me your number," and you know, I got work for you. You know, so they had and they did. They followed up. They called me several times to do stuff. But I've always had my job interfere.
I got, like, screams on my face and stuff. I'm like, man,
you there?
Yeah, we're here.
Okay.
Yeah, tell Matt to pipe down.
Yeah.
Mute your phone.
Yeah.
Fuck. Tell the parking lot and just fucking holding on conversations. Go ahead, though. Hello?
Yeah, we're still here.
Yeah.
So, anyway, that was the story. And you know, like, a negative turned into a positive, even though, I took a real beat there. But, you know.
Yeah, it was brutal. I mean, we went to Denny's after the show in Cloverdale, and, you know, Nick had to order ice water and ice because he had a big knot on his forehead. And
no, man, you're on crack.
Yeah.
No,
you're on crack.
Not that size.
Huh?
Yeah, that was brutal, though. Dr. Luther was stiff.
But explain who Dr. Luther was at that time, though. You know, he was a regular in Japan at the time.
Yeah, he was working in FMW and
and
all that stuff.
Super. I mean, you know, I have a tape of the match myself, and he was super gassed. Like, he was so big, I couldn't even get my arms around him. You know what I mean? Barely.
Yeah.
I could, like, touch my fingertips around him. And I don't know, he had a big belly, but he was, like, he was big, you know, like, all, you know, like, Jack. He was crazy. And Leviathan, you know, 2 years prior to that, he was, like, on top in pancreas.
Right.
You know? I mean, and he was all fucking juiced up too, you know, so.
Yeah, we've had Paul on the show a couple times, and yeah, he comes off as somebody you don't really want to fuck with.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and that's his persona, like legitimately. That's how he is. But, I mean, he was a very nice guy. Like, of course, in the ring, too, but, again, afterwards, both of them guys, and Paul was green as far as being a worker at the time, but, yeah, of course, he was more experienced than I was. I mean, both of them guys were, like, in the back, they apologized for being rough with me, everything, you know, but as far as for the other guy, they had nothing with that guy. They're just like, oh, that guy's fucking terrible and all that. But, in Lane's defense, I mean, he was young, you know, and he was just starting out.
Yeah,
you know, now, he was putting.
Were you guys there
the
when they passed Chico in the match?
Chico in the match.
Yeah, me and Matt and I were in the ring. It was a battle royal.
Yeah.
I don't know if Nick was in the ring or not, but tell the story again, Matt.
Yeah, I remember. I remember that. I just the story's been said so many times. Come on, we got other stories to tell.
Well, feel free. As long as they vary Chico, you can tell all the stories you want.
Okay, I got one. You guys worked, you know, all over Canada, all over the Pacific Northwest. Who would you say one of the best guys you've been in the ring with and, like, who taught you the most?
Go ahead, Nick.
I thought this was a Chico story.
Yeah, we'll get back to that.
Oh, in the Northwest, the best guy?
Yeah.
Best guy. I worked him a couple of times. Actually, I learned quite a bit from that, you know?
Yeah.
And at one point, Tim was their best guy out there. So,
yep.
I worked with Buddy Wayne and Samito one time in a tag when I was completely clueless, you know. I did learn a lot from them, too. I, at the time, I thought maybe I knew something, but after working them, I knew I didn't know anything.
Yeah. Yeah. Being in the ring with Samito, like, it was actually in that battle royal that Brian got his drawers dropped. I was in the corner with Samito, and Samito goes, grab my leg. And I grabbed his leg. He goes, no, act like you're trying to throw me out. I'm like, oh, yeah, it's a battle royal. You're supposed to work it like you're, you know, trying to succeed.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it was you know,
one of those new battle royals, I guess, right?
Yeah. And it's just like, I'm going like, oh, yeah, duh. But
yeah,
it made total sense. And people just don't,
right.
Especially
yeah,
the new guys, they don't think about stuff like that, and, you know, make it look real. And you know, there's an end game in mind and try to hit that, you know,
yeah.
And people,
you know,
work for years.
You
know,
some
know
of the, yeah, exactly. Some of the best guys that I worked with that I didn't even realize at the time, like Buddy Rose, the first time I was in the ring with Buddy Rose, I did not even realize what he was doing in the ring. That's how good it was. You know, that's how good he was. You know, it was,
yeah,
he was so smooth. He was putting me into places that I didn't even realize that I was going.
Mm-hmm.
Also, like Matt Bourne or Buddy Wayne, those guys, and Ed Wiskowski, those guys are so good that, you know, they did with me what they wanted to do, made it look good without even me knowing about it.
Yeah.
I've always been amazed at how Buddy was able to do the things he did, considering how huge he got.
You know what? Here's the thing about, like, Buddy Rose, for instance. He was such a naturally gifted athlete that he was one of those kind of guys that, like, he was just born gifted as an athlete. And so I think he was so gifted as an athlete that he took for granted his body and, you know, even at 300 pounds, he was able to do more than what most 150 pounders could do.
I mean, he could still do a kick up at his highest weight, didn't he?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was awesome. Did you work? Let's talk about some of the older Portland guys. What about the Beers? Did you work the Beers a lot?
I've worked the Beers quite a few times. As a matter of fact, I believe I had Beers' last match ever. But yeah, he was another guy that it was just like, he knew what he was doing. He had a specific style, and everybody has a DeBeers story. Like, if you ever hear a story about where somebody's chanting boring, boring, and DeBeers is like, just let's take it down a notch and let's really piss him off and get him to really chant boring and really mean it. You know, he's one of those kind of guys that, like, has such control over the crowd that you don't even, like, when you're green, you don't even realize that he's controlling the crowd when he is.
Yep.
You know, and, man, I learned so much from that guy.
What about, like, did you, I don't know if these guys would be before your time, but did you ever get to work guys like Rip Oliver or Miller?
I reffed a couple matches from Mike Miller. I've actually never wrestled him before. Met Rip Oliver a couple times, but I never worked him, no.
How about the grappler?
Yeah, both Nick and I work grappler. He's awesome. Awesome.
Yeah. When I first started watching wrestling, he was here in San Antonio working with the Dirty White Boy as the other grappler. They were awesome. And does he still, I remember people used to say after he stopped wrestling, he was like the head mechanic at Roddy Piper's Transmission. Is that thing still around?
No,
I don't believe so. I don't believe so, no.
No.
Okay.
They closed it down like 10 years ago.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Do you have any, go ahead, Kirk.
No, I was just going to say, we could go on forever talking about, you know, the most fun I ever had with these two guys was never in the ring. It was always on the way to the ring. You know, being in Madison
Tour. You've never lived until you've had a Craig take the shortcut route. Proper drive you through the building.
Oh my god!
Yeah, this guy will like look at a map, and he's got some kind of magical touch in finding the longest route possible to a place.
Absolutely.
Oh man!
I know a shortcut that's actually the scenic route.
Yeah, if you want to go to like Bremerton.
Yeah.
And you got like 4 hours.
I know a way to get there.
He'll do it. There's no problem. The car will be moving the whole time.
Right. That's why I never made it. I tested for an ambulance driver one time, and I was told no.
Were you guys in the car when Craig was going to Canada and got the whole car pulled over because he said his hands were lethal weapons?
No.
No, that was just Brian and I.
Oh, that was Brian and I.
Yeah. Yeah, they asked if I had.
Did you guys do any hotel matches, perhaps, on that trip?
No.
Okay.
I left that out for. I didn't want to intrude on Dan's territory.
I always was wondering what happened to the YWF Intercontinental title.
I don't know what happened to that one. I don't know what happened to that one, but in the very first match Brian and I ever had, he dented the YWF. Title on my head, which is now held by one Vincent Verhey.
You mean Shoulders Torelli?
Yeah, Shoulders Torelli. I'm sorry.
Okay.
By the way, the same show that I saw Nikki Six get legit powerbombed onto his head, it was a powerbomb / pile driver by Coach Mike Jones.
Awesome.
I remember
that. You know what? I remember, he was dangerous with me, and I remember you saying something, and I remember him bitching about it that you said something.
Yeah, well, he dropped you on your head, and I was pretty sure that, you know, I know it was only my first match, but I was pretty sure you weren't supposed to do that.
Oh, yeah. No, not at all.
Yeah.
It was legitimately like a Gansa bomb, you know, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, he did a power bomb that he was going to land on his knees with, but he ended up tombstoning Nick on the back of his neck and shoulders and folded him up like an accordion. It was brutal.
He thought that would be safer.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
I did.
I think was that the match where his brother Larry attacked us?
Yes.
Yeah.
And single-handedly getting wrestling banned from Ording, Washington, forever.
Mm-hmm.
I know, and what with, a mess that it once was. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Crazy.
He was wearing a shirt that said "F this" with a arrow pointed down to his penis.
But and you know what's the best thing about that? You know what's the best thing about that story is our dressing rooms that night. Our dressing rooms was a funeral home.
Yeah.
We actually were dressing, putting our wrestling gear on next to like dead bodies.
Oh wow! Well, there was a room over, but yeah. Nick, you'll be happy to know Coach and also Dave DiBiase still running shows in the area.
Yeah.
Oh, I talk to the coach like a couple times a year.
Uh-huh.
So,
Craig, wants to fly you in.
They were wondering if you're available for anything.
Yeah, I can be somebody's heavy.
And they want Dan and Chico's rematch from that LA hotel room.
You know, I got to cut you guys off because those have got to be the only two guys in the world that want to see that rematch.
That's true.
But listen, they promised to book a low ceiling venue. So that Dan's powerbomb can be effective. You know what I mean?
Right.
If you have a ceiling over 8 feet, it might not. You know, you're not going to be able to knock the guy out.
And you got to make sure the air mattresses are placed correctly on the floor.
Brian's all about safety.
Yes, he is.
Didn't he always kill you with a senton or something?
Oh, yeah, he did.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, that goof.
He always blames it on you, but considering he's the one doing the move, wouldn't it have been his fault?
Yeah, you know. What do you say?
You know, he hit me with it's not, you know, like a swanton, but, you know, like the Misawa, you know, senton where he, you know, basically jumps over you and lands on you with his back. One of those deals. He knocked the wind out of me. All 140 pounds of him knocked the wind out of me. And he blamed it on me for not sitting up and catching him.
Yeah,
good old Brian.
Oh, that's Chico.
Yeah. Well, guys, it's been a pleasure. Let me get this out of the way.
Let me get one last question for Nikki. Considering your name, did you ever have any problems wrestling with that name? And do you have any problems if there's a female wrestler or manager, let's say, with the same name in the Northeast?
Or a bass player?
Oh, yeah. No, nothing's ever came about with it at all. Last year I started working under the name Bruiser 6, but, you know, I was in Chicago the last 8 years and all that. I mean, I had my own company there. There was no issues ever. So, anyway, the only thing that ever came about here was in Canada, somebody called Tim about that. Like, you got Nikki 6's name on the poster, you know.
So they abruptly changed to high flying Nick Allen.
Oh, that's right.
And advertise it as a high flyer match. There was another match where it was like a mean guy match.
And that was me and you.
Mean guy match for Jay.
Yeah, mean guy match. Yeah,
Craig, you remember that?
Yeah, of course I do. That's where the mean guy match
you always take booking it. You always take booking advice for some fucking goof that bills your match as a mean guy match.
Yeah. Well, he got his training at Costco, so what are you going to do, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
good those fucking goofs are out of the business.
I did have one more thing that I was hoping you guys would comment on. There was, you know, after I got hurt and you guys were still working for Tim, there was a bit of a falling out. And you want to elaborate on what exactly happened?
Of who or who and who?
With
Tim.
Oh,
the falling out with Tim.
With me personally, there it was nothing personal with Tim. I just I didn't like the direction that he was going in. And you know, at the time, I got to admit, I was green. I thought I didn't know anything, and I did not. I should not even have had an opinion at that time. You know, I'll be honest with that. Tim is an awesome wrestler. He gave me a lot of breaks. I just didn't like what he was doing with the company. I didn't like how he had 25, 30 trainees that he was brought into the business. You know, I didn't like going up to – I didn't like driving
–
yeah. I didn't like driving 5 hours for a three-minute match. So that's why I left, you know.
Yeah.
And that was the only falling out for me personally. I like Tim, man. I you know, I think Tim's awesome. He's gruff. He's opinionated. But, man, he's done a lot for me personally. So, you know, I can't complain.
And me, myself, that's the same thing. You know what I mean? Yeah, I mean, he fired us a few times over and stuff. But he always brought us back. And you know what? Who else did he bring back? Nobody. Nobody ever came back. When people got fired from there or quit or whatever, they were done. You know what I mean? Craig? Craig, are you there? Hello?
I'm here. It's Craig. Are you still there, Craig? Craig actually somehow got put on mute.
Huh? Well, the show will be better.
Yes, okay, the
Craig,
show will be better. Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah,
I'm here.
Yeah, you know,
so I'm trying
you know what I mean, though? Like, you know, me and Matt or me, like, we were the only ones that would ever leave and come back. Nobody else was ever even allowed to come back.
Oh,
you
yeah.
Know?
He really held a grudge. I mean, Buddy was allowed to go in and out, but he was Buddy.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
I mean,
he's in his own deal, you know. But I'm
even Moretti.
Like,
yeah.
Even Moretti wasn't.
But, I do have to say this so publicly is that when Tim did retire or supposedly retire, he put Nick and I over. He sent a message out and put us over. So I have nothing bad to say.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I never had any problems, but, you know, there was a thing where, you know, you guys can't work for anybody else, and you know, Ed Moretti totally hated that, and hated it so much that he was done. But,
but you know, Moretti used to, like, he had a guarantee of what he got paid, you know what I mean? So, people would actually pay him that. So, that was the issue. You know what I mean? So, Tim was actually taking money away from him by doing that.
Right.
That's the thing with Ed, you know. He shouldn't have enforced that on any of the guys who were like career guys. You know, young guys. You know, we're young. You know, we're young guys. We're there to get our experience.
I wouldn't want. Yeah, totally.
But anyway, gentlemen, we got to go make an appearance in this bar now, but.
I'll throw out the plug. Tomorrow night, March 3rd, 7 o'clock bell time, in the Claremore Expo Center in Tulsa, Oklahoma. The event is called Wrestling with Domestic Violence. You'll see the likes of the Suicide Kings, Bushwhacker Luke, Clown, WWE star, it says Aaron Bolo, but I know that's not completely true. But he was on Superstars and SmackDown one time. And our first guest of the evening, Chris Youngblood. So if you're in the area, check out the event. It sounds like it's going
to
be fun.
And the original Doink the Clown, too, Matt Bourne.
Yeah, I said that second.
Okay.
But,
it's not in Tulsa. It's like 30 minutes outside of Tulsa in Claiborne, Oklahoma.
Okay, Claiborne, Oklahoma. Excuse me. Claiborne, Oklahoma.
Yeah.
General admission tickets, $10. And if you want to sit up close and maybe get a little violence on you, $15 ringside seats.
Yep, and we have an after-hours party at the Smush Room.
The Smush Room? Is Snooki going to be there?
Room number 152 at the
Will Rogers Inn.
The Will Rogers Inn, yes. So after hours party, you got to be 18 and over, full chested.
Right.
It's going to be going all night long.
Sounds good.
Up all night and then up
all right.
Long.
Take care, guys.
All right. See you. Right. Man.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay. Right, take it easy. That was pretty good.
That was a little bit of a cluster for a while. Sorry about that. We need to work on getting some better lines here.
Well, one thing is because they were in the same area, so that's probably why there's a little feedback. But
yeah.
I don't think it sounded too bad. I mean, you know, we've had worse actually.
And, how about Chris Youngblood?
I know that was awesome. We definitely got to get him back on.
Yeah, I'll take care of that.
Cool.
Definitely.
And our other co-host has returned to the show. Contreras, what's going on, Contreras?
Not much. I had about 95 people on the line, it sounds like.
Yeah, thanks for that. That you took one for the team. Seriously.
Yeah. Actually, I had to go to the bathroom, like, really bad. I was going to get off the phone regardless.
Cool. Oh, my.
So we still got a little time here, so do we have news or what's going on?
I don't have any news this week. We didn't know how long they were going to be on, but I could talk a little bit about the live SmackDown show that I went to.
Okay.
It's on right now, as a matter of fact, and you can see my beautiful face sitting in the third row. You can't miss me.
Oh, God, I'm not watching it.
It was a fun show. I really wish WWE would switch their SmackDown taping nights to something besides a Tuesday, because that's a haul up to there to Seattle for me, and you know, it's about an hour up and an hour back, and getting in bed at 12:30 to only to have the alarm go off at 4:30 kind of sucks. But good wrestling up and down the card. The NXT stuff has got to be the dirt worst wrestling show I have ever seen in my life. They opened up with a match, but then they went into this poorly acted thing with Maxine and this guy from SCW and how he was planning on proposing marriage, and Caitlin was there looking absolutely gorgeous. It's on the front page of Brian's website, the NXT show. Seriously, this is a horrible wrestling show.
It's
absolutely useless. And I thought I was going to be part of something special because it was said that this was going to be the last NXT show ever. But no, Matt Stryker swerved me and said that one Steven Regal would be in charge of, or excuse me, William Regal would be in charge of NXT from now on. So the show must go on, and that show being NXT.
You know what sucks is that even William Regal being the commissioner won't get me to watch it.
such a bad, bad show. Maxine, very hot, probably has a shot at being a diva on SmackDown or Raw. Just needs to get a little more time in the ring. Tyson Kidd looked amazing against he looked good in the ring. I can't remember who he wrestled. It was such a great thing. Kali had a 2-minute squash against the Arab, and the main event was awesome with Randy Orton and Daniel Bryan. And as Bryan said on his show the other night, Daniel Bryan working heel in the main event of SmackDown, but then coming back out, doing his full entrance again, coming back down and then working Big Show in the dark match. It was awesome. He was, you know, doing his thing where he's, you know, jumping down the ring, yelling, yes, yes, yes. And some fan had made a sign that said no, no, no. And so Daniel grabbed it. He shows it to the crowd and then rips it in half. It was awesome. And they had a good match, him and Randy. Then Kane. Kane's pyro went off, scaring my 5-year-old son. I'm pretty sure he soiled himself, but he's too big to, you know.
Anyway, we were, you know, feet away from the pyro, and it unbelievable how warm that is. And it was a fun show.
It feels just as hot if you're. I've been in the front row and I felt it, and I've been in the upper deck and felt it, and it's just as hot.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I've been in a luxury box suite and I felt it.
Yeah, it's crazy to think that, you know, you can actually feel the heat on your face when that goes off.
Yeah.
And you could be, you know, hundreds of feet away from it. But it's a good crowd. There's maybe, I'm going to guess, 8,000 to 9,000 there. They had the upper deck all tarped off, but it was a fun show. Good to, anytime I can take my son to a wrestling match, I feel a sense of accomplishment because my father never took me to one wrestling match all my life, but he hated wrestling, so what are you going to do? But yeah, actually got a really awesome picture of the finish of Kane chokeslamming Randy Orton. Hopefully Brian will throw that up on the front page here before, probably not.
Don't ask him because then he won't do it.
Yeah, that's true. So I won't ask him. And anyway, WWE is always fun to go to live. Building up very well for Mania. And that's only 4 weeks away.
I know, I can't wait.
Yeah.
I got my airfare the other day, so I'm all good to go.
Yeah. And we got some UFC on right now, so nobody's listening to this live. And ROH pay-per-view on Sunday.
There are more people listening to this show live than watching UFC tonight because they never even asked. I don't know if I saw one commercial for UFC's in weeks of the show.
That's
true.
According
to Randy, we don't get many listeners.
Randy don't know what she's talking about.
What did she say? How many views our thread had, and how many?
She saw how many views the show thread had, which is like 144, and she said that's what we have for listeners.
Oh God!
And then so I responded on her wall, and I didn't do it rudely or anything. I just said, Granny, I don't know how in the world do you think you know how many listeners we have? We're on like two different sites, and I have no idea. I just know have like an idea of what we do, and.
She hacked my Blog Talk account to see how many listeners we had.
You know what? That show
was a little down as far as Blog Talk numbers because it was another show that was done 2 days later that I guess people are clicking on that one thinking it's our show. So thanks for taking some viewers away from our last show for sure. But you know, I guess you guys do your little show. It's been bad. It's fine.
You know, it's funny. I had to go get my root canal finished today, and I was home early, and Granny saw that I was on Facebook for a minute, and she actually Facebooked me to apologize because she forgot that I was on the show.
She didn't Facebook me.
I died because, you know, she was worried that that I would be offended. You know, but had no problems burying Ed.
Yeah. That's fine.
I had a good laugh, I'll be honest with you.
Yeah.
We got a
and she ROH. Does it, she does it after she used the gift card we sent her for Christmas.
Yeah.
Oh
well,
man. That's funny.
We got a ROH 10th anniversary pay-per-view this weekend. It's on GoFightLive.com. We got the rundown of the card here is the Notorious 187 Homicide versus the Prodigy Mike Bennett. I feel sorry for Mike Bennett this weekend. we got a Glory by Honor 10 tag team rematch. Wrestling's greatest tag team, Charlie Haas and Shelton Benjamin, versus the All Night Express, Rhett Titus and Kenny King. We got Amazing Red and TJ Perkins versus the House of Truth with Michael Elgin and Roderick Strong. Jimmy Jacobs takes on
wrestling's worst nightmare, Kevin Steen, rest in peace, Jimmy Jacobs. Jay Lethal will be defending his ROH television title against Tommaso Ciampa. Ring of Honor. Whatever his name is this week. Yes, I know it's a different guy, but good night. ROH Tag Team Champions Jay and Mark Briscoe will defend against the Young Bucks. That's a clash style, if I've ever heard one. And in the main event, Davey Richards and Kyle O'Reilly will be taking on Eddie Edwards and Adam Cole. That sounds like it's going to be a good main event.
I'm sure it's going to be an awesome show, but honestly, compared to past ROH pay-per-views, it doesn't have that big, you know, it doesn't have Kevin Steen against Generico. It doesn't have, a Davey, you know, a Roddy. You know, it just is, or the Briscoes against the Kings. You know, it's kind of.
The star power is not there.
Yeah, but I'm sure it's going to be, it'll be five times worth the money, the price of the pay-per-view.
Yeah, I mean.
I'm not at all during that description.
The $10 price tag, I don't think there's a better value in pro wrestling right now. I mean, for what you get, it's, it's well worth the money.
Isn't the Tattletale supposed to do an iPay-per-view for like 99 cents or something?
Yeah, I think it's already happened, actually.
The Tattletale, okay. Who's that?
He's talking about
the guy who tattletailed on me to Brian about the guy was mean to him and his company.
Well, get over that shit.
I
didn't say his name. I just said tattletale. he name dropped me. I'm not going to name drop him. But anyway, that's pretty desperate when you're going to have a pay per view for 99 cents because you don't want people to pirate it.
Hey, I wouldn't even pay 99 cents for one of those pay per views, so. Don't worry about it.
Me neither, especially not for that company. But anyway,
Did you see the picture of Jim Cornette blocking the door so the Briscoes can't leave ROH?
Yes.
Okay, what's the story with that?
Basically, there was a story going around on the internet that Jim Cornette was not allowing the Briscoes and also Adam Cole to go and wrestle for the WWE. I don't know
how
the story got.
I think it was Sinclair with their new contract and stuff.
So as a rib, they put Jim Cornette in front of a door leading to the outside, and he's blocking them from exiting the door. And the picture is phenomenal. So find it on the internet, anybody who hasn't seen it yet. It's so great.
Yeah, so the story was just some internet rumor bullshit that just popped up.
Absolutely. And both guys, Jay and also Adam Cole, have both posted on their Twitter and Facebook accounts that the whole story is false and fabricated and don't know where it came from and this, that, and the other thing. So
I think maybe whoever's in charge of Sinclair, or owns the company now, had previously said that if anybody wants to, go to, like, WWE or something, they wouldn't have any problem with it, but now they wouldn't let them go because they're under contract or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, and I'm sure every one of those guys, I haven't seen their contracts, but I've known that there's been at least two guys that are in FCW right now that had no problems leaving when they were invited to join the
club. They've never had a problem with anyone leaving, as far as I've ever heard. I've actually never heard of anyone really leaving ROH on bad terms as far as going up to a bigger promotion. I'm sure, if they're going to like other independents, maybe. But as far as like, TNA or WWE, I've never ever heard of them trying to stop anything.
That's because ROH is a professional company. As how many people bash them and say that their product is overrated and it sucks or whatever. They're a professional company.
They don't have the star power. They don't have the star power that they used to have. And
sure.
But as far as from first match to last match, the shows are better than they've ever been. I mean, yeah, at one time you had CM Punk and you had Danielson, you had Samoa Joe in the main events, but you had some shit in the fucking openers.
The thing that really bugs me is everybody dumps on Mike Bennett, and he might be the most WWE-friendly guy that they have in the company right now.
Yeah.
I don't understand that a bit.
It's just because he's not your typical Ring of Honor. He's not CM Punk. He's not Samoa Joe. He's not doing... He doesn't wrestle indie-rific matches. He's more of a regular type wrestler.
Yeah, he's an old-school Southern-style wrestler. He's great at getting heat. When he walks out the curtain, you hate that man. And when he's got a pretty lady on his arm, that don't help things either. So,
speaking of which, shoot Bob a message and tell him that we need to get Maria on the show.
It's already taken care of, my friend. I'll see what I can do.
And he does have an awesome manager doing an awesome Nikki gimmick.
Yeah. Bob's a great talent. And, I think Mike Bennett's, I think he's great.
I freaked out like it was his birthday a while back, but Bob Evans is actually younger than me, and he looks like he's about 30, 40 years older than me.
The road alone, yeah. Road alone, yeah.
Yeah, I guess so.
And you might want to send him a shout out because he listens to the show often.
Bob's my buddy. He knows I love him.
Oh Lord!
Plus, we got something in common. We both throw the newspapers for one of our jobs.
Oh man!
What kind of bike do you ride, a Murray?
Schwinn. I shouldn't throw stones. That was my first job as well, throwing a newspaper. Tacoma News Tribune, 12 a.m., throwing papers.
At what time?
I started at 12 a.m. They wanted the paper out early.
Damn. Oh, you started at midnight then. Damn.
Yeah, and it was only an hour, so I got in and got out. I started it. It was just local. They wanted the papers got dropped off at midnight, and I was to have them out before 7. And so a lot of the times I would just go get them at midnight and get a ton. I don't procrastinate. What are you gonna do?
Cool. Well, let me go ahead and throw out the plugs out real quick already. Get it out of the way.
Yeah.
Everyone, check out angrymarks.com. You can always download and stream our show at angrymarks.com, along with a lot of other shows like the Angry Marks Show. And, damn it, I was going to plug it, but I forgot the name of it. Peter H's show, where Whitney was on, Glove Up or Shut Up, I think. You got to check out that show.
Yes.
And we'll be back. And like I said, you can check out our show, all the archives of our shows at angrymarks.com.
You got a show this week, Katrae?
No, somebody's out of town this week, so we're going to do one next week.
Okay.
We did one Sunday night. We did a live drawing and rebooked Starrcade 91 Battle Bowl with the Lethal Lottery. It's pretty fun.
Let me ask you a question. When you rebooked the show and you pulled names, did you end up having two tag team partners end up as a team?
No, actually, we didn't.
Did you ever have one tag team partner go against his other tag team partner in a match? In other words, two of the same guys on opposite sides of the ring?
No, I don't think we did. It was more like we would have they weren't partners, but they were just babyface friends, you know, like on the TV and stuff. Not so much tag team partners. We had a couple of those.
Yeah, it's always amazing to me that the way that these things get booked, and so often you see the two tag team partners facing each other, or the two tag team partners actually end up as a team just at quote-unquote random. Wrestling writers must think that we're very, very stupid.
Craig, you were just at a wrestling show. Wrestling fans are stupid.
But they didn't do anything that really insulted my intelligence except for have Natalya blow gas on cue. I mean, other than that, they did not insult my intelligence most of the evening.
That's good.
Just
well,
saying.
I guess sorry for Randy Orton if he has to wear a cane at WrestleMania.
Oh, jeez.
He deserves better.
Yeah. Poor Randy Orton.
I'd rather see him at least in a three-way with Sheamus and Daniel Bryan or something like that.
Yeah, he's getting taken down a notch for that particular.
Well, it's 4 weeks. They could blow it off sooner and have Kane wrestle Ryder.
I wonder if they're going to have hopefully have Randy Orton and try to embrace the hate.
Now, you know what they should have for one of the opening matches? It should be Zack Ryder against Eve.
I want to see an Inferno match with Kane and Zack Ryder, and Ryder gets hit on fire.
They really be screaming woo woo woo. But I guess we can go ahead and start to wrap up here. Craig, do you have any last things you want to talk about before we go?
I have nothing to talk about. Just thanks to Nick Allen and Matt Farmer for doing the show tonight. I hope those guys have a safe trip home. I'm sure they'll repost this on their Facebook pages. So if you are a new listener because of those two guys, come back and join us when things aren't a little so chaotic. So,
cool. Katrae, you got anything?
No.
Okay.
No. And I don't have too much either. The only thing I was kind of glancing at some of the fights on the UFC.
Mm-hmm.
And they're having their tournament, and I guess everyone favors Demetrius Johnson. Now, I didn't see the whole fight, but I saw the third round where he got his fucking ass kicked, but somehow still won the fight. So,
and he's from about 5 miles up the road here in Spanaway, Washington, and met Demetrius Johnson, heck of a guy.
And they're showing the UFC's biggest superstar on the screen right now, Mark Hunt.
And that's the one that Brian and Dave.
Very offended they didn't cover that fight on their first UFC post show last weekend.
That fight actually made me some money, so big Mark Hunt fan right now. But
the ladies' fight tomorrow? What's that on?
That is
tomorrow,
on Showtime.
Oh, you
can
watch that.
You can also. If you don't have Showtime, you can actually rent it on pay-per-view if you have DirecTV. I think it's like $34. Or you can, call a
friend. Or you can just let me know and I'll send you a link to it.
Or you can call your friend Brian and have him invite you over. So that's what I'm doing. So, Miesha Tate, Ronda Rousey, two of the hottest MMA fighters in the world.
Did you see the weigh down? The weigh in? They got face to face and forehead to forehead.
I did not. Did you have a moment?
I was about to because Ronda was looking fucking hot in her outfit. But no, they posed and Miesha got forehead to forehead and then Rowdy kind of pushed her back with her forehead. And then when they were taking pictures, they just have a look of disgust on their faces. And
another
Miesha went in and acknowledged Ronda, and when they interviewed her real quick,
right?
She went in and say her name. So it's gonna be an awesome cat fight tomorrow.
Another little known fact: Miesha Tate is from Tacoma, Washington, just down the road from my place, and she was on a episode of Bob Rivers' radio. He's the one that makes all the Twisted Christmas CDs. I don't know if you if they've gotten out that far, but he's a radio personality and his
Are you
his
talking
producer,
about like the Christmas songs, the heavy metal songs?
Yes, like Santa Claus.
I
Am Santa Claus as done by Black Sabbath, Anyway, he did all those. Anyway, he's on the radio and has been on the radio here in Seattle all my life, basically. And his producer saw a picture of a young Miesha Tate who is fighting on a local show and took a shine to her and said something along the lines of, I think I can beat her up. And Misha came down to the studio, and they had a quote-unquote match, and she armbarred him and made him tap out in right about 30 seconds.
So that's about what's going to happen to her tomorrow night.
I'm afraid so.
I hope so. Ronda is awesome. I mean, she's awesome. That's pretty much all I can say about her. And she's pretty goddamn hot. So. But we'll go ahead and end the show on that note, and we will be back next week, and we'll see if we have anything going on. We'll think of something good to talk about.
Maybe with Chris Youngblood. Who knows?
Oh, yeah, maybe. That'd be awesome. But, yeah, everybody come back next week, and we will talk to everyone then.
To be the man, you got to beat the man. You want to find out how good you are? You're looking at the measuring stick. Let's go hook him up. I just whipped your ass. You take it all away. I'm gonna dog you until I wear your Texas ass out every day. The game is awesome. And hell, I might even get on top of my wife tonight.